Mainstream Mental Health Radio
with Dr. John Huber.
What do you think you are, crazy or something? Well, you're not.
We're on a mission from God.
News, issues revolving around mental health.
Dr. John Huber, a mental health professional for over 20 years, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, a clinical forensic psychologist, and a psychology professor at Texas State University. Breaking the silence of mental health, one day at a time. Discussing the human condition. Providing a sounding board for mental health issues. And making mental health mainstream.
You got a gift, my friend.
Now it's time for Mainstream Mental Health Radio.
Let the healing begin.
With Dr. John Huber. To Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media. Google Plus, Mainstream Mental Health. Instagram, at Mainstream Mental Health. Twitter, at Mainstream MENTL. And search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. John Huber. And everybody, please follow us at mainstreammentalhealth.org. Share our podcast with your friends and family on the Mental Health News Radio Network. And today, we've got somebody who I've been a fan of for a long time. Many of you may not know his name, Bill Duke, but I definitely believe every one of you will know him the minute you see his face. And he has been acting back to the 70s. He has made significant impact in media by becoming a director as well. And you may remember him from Commando, Predator, X-Men, American Gigolo, also Car Wash. In that whole time, he has become a very sought-after director, producer, entrepreneur, and just an all-around humanitarian. So with that, I'd like to introduce Bill Duke, and we will talk a little bit about his book, My 40-Year Career on Screen and Behind the Camera. I'm really excited to see it. It hasn't been released yet, but you can pre-order, I believe, right now on Amazon. And with that, Mr. Duke, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on. Much appreciated.
Well, I have one question. You know, I mean, I just watched Predator again the other night. Okay, when you were shooting the minigun, was it live ammo or were those blanks?
They were blanks, but when they fired, it had the same reaction as real bullets because it pushed you back, so you had to have a very solid stance and just fire. So it was pretty
powerful. Well, I mean, when I first saw it, I was so jealous at that point that you actually got to fire one. So I know there's a published interview about it specifically, but I just wanted to make sure that and blanks can be very, very powerful and have that same kick and recoil and everything else. So I don't want to diminish that, but it's just exciting. So, let's jump right into your book and tell me a little about your book, and then I've got some other questions and things like that that are going on. So,
well, the book is a mixture of a few things. It's one, my life, growing up in a segregated Poughkeepsie, New York, in my youth and to my present time. It also involves my poetry. I started out as a writer. I have dyslexia, which is a specific disease, and in terms of my reading and writing skills, it was challenging, but I became a writer of poetry. And it talks also about my life in the industry, and I try to give nuggets of information to young people coming into the industry, the paradigm shift from film and television to media, and some of the things that they can use, hopefully, to help them in this business of what I call rejection.
That's what it is, a business of rejection, definitely. And, you know, you've done a lot that people may not know about. I mean, the directing and, you know, you directed episodes of Dallas, Falcon Crest, Hill Street Blues, Miami Vice, you know, you've been involved in some real major stuff. And many people would say that alone, you know, forget about your acting, that that alone was significant life achievement. But you have also reached some great success in acting as well. And now you started early on in 1971 with, what was it, the Duke Media Foundation, and what's that about?
Well, the Duke Media Foundation really is to help young people that are interested in our industry, to give them an understanding of the paradigm shift, as I said before, from film and TV into media. And by media, I mean everything from distribution, Netflix, Hulu, Crackle, Amazon, et cetera. And to understand that there are platforms that they have access to that did not exist. I mean, I don't know if you remember the first cell phone. I remember it was the biggest. You remember that thing you carried around?
It was a brick.
With an antenna.
Yes.
That was the first cell phone, and there was no internet. And so we talk about the changes in that, and also the jobs that are, you know, not only in front of it, but behind it in terms of programming and those kinds of. And so we teach really the business of the industry. The second thing we teach is financial literacy, because we are taught many times how to spend money, but not how to use it. And so
exactly.
Karen Clark, a banker over at Citi Bank, she comes in and she teaches what is Wall Street, the stock market, what is the FDIC, what's the Federal Reserve, what is credit, what is debt, what is spending, what is saving, what is compound interest, a lot of different things, so that young people will understand how to use money, not only spend it. So we think those are essential elements in terms of surviving in our industry and the country, and, you know, surviving generally.
Definitely. I mean, and education today in our country has gotten so bad, they don't teach you how to do even simple interest, forget compound interest.
That's right.
Yeah, so it's very important. And I know, you know, I've gone through decades of graduate school and like that, and not one class was presented to me about how to run a business, how to know what is a good business investment, anything like that. So I think what you're doing is not only essential, but you should be praised for it.
Thank you so much.
Now, I also have to ask, and it's probably in your book, do you have some moments in your life that affirmed your career choice, your pathway, you know, that one moment where you said, man, I'm doing the right thing? Because a lot of people get out there and they fight hard and they struggle and they struggle and they struggle. And even when they get success, they never really get affirmation that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. And, you know, that's something I'm always looking for. I know with my nonprofit here, we go out and we talk all the time, and I don't get a lot of feedback from the people we're helping. And when I do, it's like, okay, this has all been worth it. You know, I've helped somebody. So what is it for you, or what has it been for you?
Well, I think people's response to my work has been really affirming, and I've been very fortunate. There have been people who have helped me and believed in me. Sometimes, to be honest with you, when I didn't believe in myself any longer, and I was a drug head at one time on the streets of New York, and thank God I was introduced to transcendental meditation, which changed my life. And got me off drugs. I had a mentor named Lloyd Richards who believed in me. I worked for him as an assistant. And also, he was at Boston University, NYU School of the Arts, head of the drama department. And that was the first acting I got into at BU. And I followed him to NYU. He gave me my first job, the Negro Ensemble Company. Then when he did the Gold Watch in Los Angeles, which was a PBS special on the Japanese internment, he made me his assistant and told me to stay because he believed in me in Los Angeles.
Wow.
So I've been very fortunate. I cannot tell you the number of people that believed in me, and that's why I try to give back, because somebody gave to me.
And that's important. It really is, you know, because once you start having success, the best way to I think foster and stimulate continued success is to help other people along the way. And, you know, I sit back and I think, man, you're not a small person. I mean, you're 6'4", and you have a presence about you just because of that. And has it been hard for you, a challenge for you, to get maybe some of the roles and stuff that you really wanted because of your size?
I think because of my size and my race that, you know, if you're a big, tall, black man, you're sometimes seen as threatening or dangerous or whatever. And I've tried to do my best to, yeah, some of those roles I've taken because, you know, I think they were well written and financially they helped. But I've tried to also, you know, go for other things that are not intimidating but human. I did a series called Palmerstown USA in the early 80s with Norman Lear and Alex Haley, who were the producers, and that was one of the most humane roles I've ever had as an actor. So,
awesome.
Yes.
That's good. Yeah, because, I mean, it's a challenge, and you know, I'm not small, but I'm not huge either. I'm right at 6 foot and played football, and I've got a lot of friends who went on and played in the NFL and things like that, and it's I know for them, a lot of times when they retired and they went into business, you know, that they were all of a sudden kind of like, wow, you know, that whole intimidation factor is overwhelming for a lot of people, and it scares people. And, you know, they're big old teddy bears, man. I mean, they get out on the field and they're a warrior, but the minute they step off, it's, you know, these guys are, I've seen them cry, you know, you see them, it's just amazing. And, but the rest of the world doesn't know that.
Well, their humanity is not allowed to be shown sometimes. And we're all human, you know, and we all go through the same, some of the same things every single day, no matter what the color of your skin is or how tall you
exactly
are. Oh, life is challenging. And in my business, It's as I said before, it's a business of rejection. And if you don't have, you know, something to go to that is a business of rejection, and people say, well, just get over it, you know. Well, if you go up for a week and you go up for five parts and everyone said no, you know it's show business. You know it's, you're an actor, but people say don't take it personally, but on some level you do. And if you don't have the ability through whatever healing you have in your life, I was lucky to find transcendental meditation, but if you don't find that healing, it can be very disturbing, self-destructive, a lot of things.
And I think it's kind of cruel to say don't take it personally, because you're selling yourself. That's exactly what you're doing. It is very
cruel. Exactly.
And then it's kind of, yeah, it's like when I have patients who walk in who with depression, and I have, everybody tells me just to get over it. Well, if they could get over it, they wouldn't need me. They wouldn't be depressed. You know, it's they're upset for a reason when they get rejected, because it is personal. And, you know, on that level, but on another level, you know, that director or the people who are casting, that they're looking for a very specific thing, and sometimes they don't know it until they see it, but other times they've got this image in their head, and you know it's very disturbing when they give you this brief description, this is what we're looking for, and you walk in there and you fit it to a T, but it's not really what they're looking for. They didn't describe it well enough.
It happens every day, and I just think the people that are coming into the business now, the young people, we really have to give them some understanding that it is a business. And they come with passion, you know, and nothing wrong with passion. But passion without understanding that it's a business also can be very frustrating. And sometimes they take it very personally. And it's important to inform them, put it that way.
It is. And today, you know, we have this Insta thing where you can go on and all of a sudden you've got 200,000 YouTube followers because you did something stupid. And to be honest with you, the business of entertainment doesn't want stupid, you know? So they think, oh, I'm perfect for this. And they walk out there and it's like, what are you doing here? You have no skills. You have no talent. And they're like, what do you mean? I have 200,000 followers. I'm famous. And it's like, nope, you're not.
No, you're totally right. And we're living in an instant gratification society. You know,
yes.
It's like, you know, I have a pastor who's a friend of mine, and he said, as an example, he asked his parishioners, he said, everybody who wants to go to heaven, stand up and say hallelujah. And everybody in the church, 1,200 people got up and sang and clapped and danced. He said, calm down, calm down. He said, everybody who wants to die, stand up and sing hallelujah. Nobody stood up. So I got a third
but you got to die to go to heaven.
How are you going to get to heaven if you don't die?
That's right. Oh, man.
Everybody
insight.
Wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die.
Yeah. In other words, nobody wants to do the work to do it.
Nobody.
You know, and I think we get confused, and the young people today get confused because they see people like the Kardashians or Paris Hilton, who they're just famous because they're famous. That you know, there's not a particular skill there. They're not great actors. They're not singers. They're just famous. And they're like, well, why can't I? And, you know, I've actually got some individuals who I'm working with, their attorneys brought them to me because they tried to get famous by committing crimes on these videotapes and posting it online. And a lot of them did. They got some relative local fame. And then, you know, one of their people following them was a police officer. Next thing they know, they're facing a judge. But
crazy.
Exactly. It's like I want to sit down and say, okay, let's think about adult decision making here. And then they turn around and they look at this Insta fame, this Kardashian mentality, and it's hard for them to rationalize what should be done.
Well, you know, like the old folks of my generation used to say, common sense ain't so common.
And they're right. They really are. You know, right now I'm thinking that like my grandfather used to tell me that growing old is not for it's not for the young, but youth is wasted on the young. And I'm feeling it right now. So.
Me too, believe me.
So besides your book, I know you're probably gonna when that hits the place, you're probably gonna go do when it hits the marketplace, you're probably going to go do some signings and stuff like that. You have anything else in the works that you're excited about?
Yeah, well, a few things. Right now I'm acting in a series on CW called Black Lightning. It's a Black Hero thing, but it's about family, et cetera. And it's the second season, and I'll be doing 8 episodes this entire time, and I'll be here till January. And I have a film coming. It's out now called Mandy, starring Nicolas Cage, which is doing very well. And then next year, I act in the film Steven Soderbergh called High Flying Bird. And that comes out next year. What was amazing about that is how he shot the entire feature film with 5 iPhone 8s.
Really?
The entire film.
Wow. Well, at least it's all digital.
Yes, it is.
I remember a few years ago when they're like, hey, we're using digital cameras. And it's like,
right.
Now everybody's phone's digital. What's the big deal, right?
Yep. Totally different deal, man.
It is. Do you see or have any concerns with this evolution? You know, we had television, and we started really slow with that. We had 1 or 2 channels, and we had 3 channels. And then we continued with the evolution till the 70s, and all of a sudden we had cable. So people kind of learned how to deal with the mind-numbing effect of television. But cell phones came out, and then smartphones hit in 2007, and it changed the world. And our world is never going back. But it's been 11 years, and we're finding all these issues with how social media actually causes depression, how it actually makes us less social, how we're not learning how to communicate and all that kind of stuff. Where do you see this going? What do you think this is doing to our kids today?
Well, I have some concerns. As you know, robotics are taking over. There's a great video on YouTube, which I've watched numerous times because it's insightfully frightening. It's called Humans Need Not Apply. Humans Need Not Apply.
Huh.
And it talks about how robotics are taking over, and we're not aware of the impact that it's going to have on our culture and society. And it points to the fact that, say, 9 years ago, you go to a bank, right, and
right.
You go to the teller, and there's 9 teller windows with 9 human beings behind the teller windows, right?
Right.
So you go to the bank, and there's 9 teller windows, but there's 3 people, and the rest are robots that take your card, cash your check, give you money back or whatever you need. They don't take vacations. They don't get sick or anything.
That's
the
right.
Next thing is driverless cars, which are going to become driverless trucks. In other words, a truck can be pointed in a direction, let's say, 300 miles away, go a certain speed, et cetera, with no driver. So what is the impact of that overall, you know, in terms of our society, if we're not aware of the impact of robotics? And I'm going to tell you one thing, my friend. It's had, you know, 10, 15 years ago in L.A., for example, I used to know every street, drive every
right.
street, you know. Then I got GPS around 4 years ago, okay? Part of my brain died. Without the
right.
GPS, I can't get there. Something happened, right?
Right. You don't lose it, or you don't use it, you lose it. I mean, just like
you
a muscle in your body.
You lose it, that's right.
Exactly. It's scary to think of that.
Yeah, it's a very, I don't know. And you know, when you go to a restaurant, you look at 2 people at a table, say a husband and wife, they're both on their phones texting.
Right. Well, I go into a high school. Yeah, I've gone into high school cafeterias to try and observe some of my patients, and nobody's talking. They're texting each other. So I sit down. Hey, what are y'all doing? I'm talking to my friend right here. And I'm like, you're talking? No, you're texting. You're not talking.
It's a very, I don't even know how to describe it. I don't know. I believe in human communication. I like
yes.
talking to another person. And sometimes it's, you know, people are not doing that as much anymore. And I think there's something being lost.
You know, I just had this thought, Bill. You and I need to get together and write a little 30-minute show, and it's all text, not a single word. Just. And the millennials will
it'll
buy it.
Be,
eat it up.
It'll probably be a hit. It'll probably be a
exactly.
hit.
Exactly. Exactly. So if anybody out there does that, you better give us credit for it. So.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Oh, man, that is crazy. Well, you know, I think we'll get over this. I think the pendulum will swing back in the other direction. I mean, we got through Elvis. We can get through this. You know, Elvis was supposed to destroy mankind because he moved his hips on national television. But and you know, I talked to you know, he was before my time, and I talked to friends of mine who remember watching him on TV and ladies telling me how they became so obsessed with this man, and primarily because they said, oh, no, he's dangerous, not because he particularly, in their opinion, was the best-looking person or had the best moves.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're driven by media, and now we all have control of media right there in the palm of our hands, and it is a scary thing.
Are
we mature enough? Right. And are we mature enough as a society to deal with that?
That's the question. That is the question.
Oh, definitely. Well, tell everybody about your book one more time. And I believe you can pre-order that on Amazon at this point. And do you have an actual release date? Or
It'll be released on the 15th of November, and it's you know, it's an insight into my life, but also some nuggets in terms of survival in our industry. So I just hope that people will enjoy it, and I just want to thank you so much for having me on. I really, this has been a very insightful conversation, and also great questions, and I appreciate it.
Well, awesome. If you ever need a psychologist or a forensic expert, hey, give me a call sometime. So
that means I'll call you as soon as we hang up.
Yeah, we'll do that off the air. All right. Well, that concludes our show for today. I'd like to thank everybody for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio. And don't forget to follow us at mainstreammentalhealth.org, or you can follow us also at drpsycho.org. And remember, as our guest today shows, life is what happens while you're making plans. So buckle up.
Thanks for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media, Google+, Mainstream Mental Health, Instagram at Mainstream Mental Health, Twitter at Mainstream MENTL, and search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.